Welcome to this week's episode of Drive the Bid, the automotive podcast brought to you by AutoHunter.com,
your destination for online collector car auctions.
Hosted by Diego Rosenberg and Derek Shakey. Drive the Bid starts now.
Hey folks, welcome to Drive the Bid. I am Diego Rosenberg, and right here is Derek Shakey.
Unfortunately.
Why unfortunately? Do your parents say that to you?
They've been known to, just kidding. It depends on the day, I guess.
Okay, so rather than wallow in your own self-pity, why don't we move forward?
Okay, I will try for you, Diego.
Sounds good. You're a pal. The news, starting with you.
Yeah, so right now through February 26th, if you are at the LAX airport and you're in a rush and you are what Delta and Porsche deem to be a select or unsuspecting traveler, then you might just get a ride to your connecting flight on the tarmac in a Porsche 911 GT3 RS. So I didn't know this, but Delta and Porsche have been corporate sort of partners for more than a decade. And so this is one of their sort of promotional things. You know, they give people that have tight connecting flights a ride in a car like this. In 2023, they did the same thing, but in a 918 Spyder at the Atlanta airport.
Why wouldn't they do a Panamera that actually has room for luggage and people?
Yeah, they have other vehicles like that. Yeah, like they have, I think Panamera is one of the ones I saw. And they probably got, you know, the SUVs as well. But, you know, obviously this would be the most attention getting one. Although, yeah, like you said, I was thinking about it. It was like, okay, well, obviously, if they were going to use this, they would have to pre-screen the passengers to make sure that they didn't have a ton of luggage. They'd have to be traveling light because that front trunk there is actually replaced with a big radiator. So you would probably just need like a backpack and that's it.
I do like the luggage rack in the back though.
Yeah, about that. It's a very novel way of getting around. I mean, even though you're not flying private, if you're getting escorted in one of those, that is definitely a flex.
Do they give you those Biscoff cookies?
You know, there's not enough room for those. With two people and a backpack, They're just out of space.
You know, if it's a Tiptronic, I think I will take another way to my connection.
Yeah, last I remember, the RS cars are only PDK.
That's good. Not.
Although it makes me wonder, I mean, since, you know, airports are so regulated, yeah, you get transported in that. But, I mean, what's the top speed they can go? Like 10, 15 miles an hour? I don't know, but it would be cool to try. I mean, it's definitely a novelty.
That it is. So now we're going to go to my news story. This insipid vehicle is, I don't know how to pronounce it. It's the Volkswagen ID7 or ID7.
I figured it's ID7.
That's what I've been saying, but I don't know. And I don't remember enough about psychology to say what the id is. I remember the ego a little bit more. In any case, let's say ID. So the ID7 will be coming to the United States shortly. It's going to be the replacement for the Passat and continue Volkswagen's electrification. And, you know, they all look kind of bland. You know, you look at the ID4, the front end. You know, like Volkswagen used to have some kind of character to it. Now it just looks kind of like a blob. That being said, they do have a wagon coming out.
That kind of looks like one already.
Yeah. So the sedan that we're getting, they're all also going to have a wagon, but it's not going to reach the United States.
Okay.
Now, could it in 2 years? Maybe. But right now, there has been a no announcement, no nothing. And I imagine, you know, automakers being who they are, they're not going to want to cannibalize their SUV sales. But who knows? It would be nice, electric or otherwise, to have a wagon. But it's not as nice as the what is the model called? The outgoing one, the Arteon. Is that how you pronounce it?
Oh yeah,
the wagon. Have you ever seen the wagon that they had in Europe for that?
Yeah, a while ago.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah, I mean, there's always hope. I mean, there's, what is it, the new BMW M4? I think one of the designers recently said that they're going to bring that to the U.S. It's either the M3 or the M4 wagon. I forget which one of those models the wagon would apply to.
I'm guessing the M3 because it's four-door?
Yeah, maybe that would make sense, yeah. But last I saw, that should be coming here. So there's always hope, but I get what you're saying. Yeah, you know, they certainly don't want to cannibalize on what would probably be their highest seller of the two here.
Yeah, and when it comes to the BMW, the wagon's a little bit more of a niche thing, you know, an M3
wagon. In general here, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, something like this, I know they'd want it to be a volume thing, and, you know, that's not going to be the case.
Yeah.
At least, you know, compared, you know, most people who are shopping for cars are not like you and me. So, anyway, nice to see a wagon in the fold, just not for us.
Forbidden fruit.
Yes. So, up next, we're going to do a quick take on this vehicle that you have selected for us.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So, speaking of German vehicles, you know, originally, I was thinking of a concept vehicle, you know, VW concept vehicle. But then the more I looked into it, I was like, oh, you know, this is more interesting. And there seemed to be, you know, this seemed to fit the path that I was going down a little more. So back in the early 2000s, well, actually, it started in late 1999. So at the Detroit Auto Show in 1999. Volkswagen revealed this concept of a high-performance version of the new Beetle. So flash forward a couple of years, 2001, they actually put the new Beetle RSI into production. And this thing was wild in every way. So
did we get it in the States?
That's the catch.
See, that's kind of I don't recognize it, but go on.
Yeah, so this was not offered in the States. It was offered in like Mexico, Japan, Europe, from 2001 to 2003. VW only made 251 of these. 250 of them were in silver. But there was one that they made for the VW CEO at the time, and it was in blue. Now, you know, what makes this a crazy car is, I mean, aside from the obvious, you know, it's got the different front and rear bumpers, dual exhaust, big wing in the back, the OZ wheels, is obviously in the engine bay. So this was the first application of the VR6 engine in a VW. So it was a narrow angle 3.2 liter V6, and it went on to be in the Audi TT and the R32 Golf. So, you know, the output figures weren't crazy. I mean, it's 221 horsepower, but they mated it with all-wheel drive and a 6-speed manual. So, yeah, it was a, you know, hopped up VW. And then inside you got these, I think the core of the seats was carbon fiber. And then they had these, aluminum, I think the window or the door pulls. So upscale materials.
The design of the back of the seats is nice. It kind of reminds me of the Volkswagen bus a little bit, the front end.
Oh, yeah. Like that kind of scalloping.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I can see that. Yeah, and on top of all of that, back in 2001, this cost the equivalent of $80,000.
Which is nuts.
Oh, absolutely, but yeah.
Let's say, what did a regular Volkswagen Turbo Beetle cost at the time? Because I mean, in Germany, because in the end we have an exchange rate.
Yeah. Well, from what I read, when you crunch the numbers, these basically cost the equivalent of two Porsche Boxsters back then.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's nuts.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, you know, they put the wide body kit on there and everything. But yeah, yeah, we did not get this, unfortunately.
Okay, so I never heard of it, or I forgot about it. I'm sure I read about it and don't remember it at all. It's pretty cool, though.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
When the Turbo Beetle came out, I drove it. I think I was in, I think it was Frankfort, Michigan.
Oh, okay. You faked me out there.
back roads there. It was a very cool car.
Mm.
And I'm reminded of the Shifter, too.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's just like this Volkswagen and Audi were doing a lot of neat stuff. Now it's just, as I have shown you before, a little bit of a snore fest.
Yeah, I mean, and there's no Beetle. Not anymore.
Well, I mean, there's still a nice GTI out there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly. It's been a few years since I've driven one of those, but good grief. That's one of those cars, within a few miles of driving it, I mean, I don't know how you'd feel about it, but within a few miles of driving that, I was just in love with it.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And my quick take is not such a quick take as a little profile on someone in the automotive world. In this case, it is, actually, let's back up a bit. Who's the most famous Armenian in America to you?
Famous Armenian. Robert Kardashian.
Oh, that's actually a good point. My answer was going to be, and you know, it's not really Robert Kardashian, but his children. Cher.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So for those of you who are, I don't know what to call it, who don't know a lot about other cultures, Armenia, I guess, is a country. I don't remember the history, like if they're part of the Soviet Union. I just remember, let's say, my classmate, Kate Nahapetian, she told us about Armenia, and we never heard of it, you know, being in eighth, ninth grade. So ever since then, I have been a little bit sensitive to Armenians. And then having, because, of course, the last names are easy to pick out. And when you live in LA, like I did 10 years ago, there's a nice Armenian community there, System of a Down, or as a band of Armenians from Glendale, California. But I was going to say the second most famous Armenian is Ed Iskandarian. And I just wanted to tell you a little bit about him because he is an important person in automotive history in America. He was born in 1921. In Tulare County, which is near Fresno. And he moved to LA when he was pretty young because the grape fields were not putting out, so to speak. So he got his education with hot rodding and the dry lakes and all that. He fought in World War II, got back, and of course, that's when things started picking up. And there was so much demand for the camshaft that he needed from all these companies that he had to wait 5 months. So instead, being a resourceful individual, he bought machining equipment so he could make his own camshafts. And the rest, as they say, is history. He became very famous among the hot rod set for his camshafts. They were putting out more than the stock camshafts from the automotive manufacturers and just blew up from there. So he is still alive.
Yeah, man.
He is going to be, I guess, 103 years old this year.
Yeah, I didn't realize he was that old. I mean, yeah. I knew he was old, but not that old.
Yeah. So he doesn't own the company anymore. He sold it a while ago, but he is one of the people, let's say, out of all the Edelbrocks and all that stuff that are familiar names from the days of hot rodding, he's the one that survives, the only one as far as I know.
Yeah.
So kudos to Ed.
Yeah, man. Wow. Pretty cool.
So next, our special topic, I forget the exact name of it, but it was something Urban Legends and Lies, I think.
Yeah, Automotive Urban Legends and Lies.
Okay, very good. It's like I made up the name and I forgot it. But I know what it's about. So we're going to start off with one that you have picked out.
Yes. Okay, so I remember back in high school, my buddy Jake knew this guy. Let's just call him James. And From what I remember, James drove a Nissan Pulsar NX. I think it was red. And Jake was telling me, he's like, yeah, like he was, James was telling me this story that like he got in a race with somebody and he activated his push button supercharger. And I just, you know, and I didn't have any, I mean, I didn't even have a car at that point. I was into cars, but I didn't have a car at that point, you know, was, you know, didn't turn wrenches or anything, but I was like, I just knew right away. I was like, that just sounds ridiculous, you know? And I, that's what I don't get. I mean, I guess in the automotive community, there's always going to be tall tales and BS stories and everything. But then it's especially likely when, you know, high school guys are talking about cars, you know, because everybody's hormonal. Everybody's got something to prove. Everybody wants to fit in. But it's just like you were, this guy was talking to a friend of his, and then it's just, he felt the need to just make up this bogus story. I don't understand.
Do you think that he believed it?
That's a good question. Well, I mean, I don't see how he could.
But was he a car guy?
I don't think so. Then I mean, I didn't really know the guy that well.
He could believe anything.
Well, you know, the funny thing was, several years later, I was reading, it had to be one of the original Ian Fleming James Bond novels, and on his Bentley, if I remember correctly, he had a button that activated the supercharger. Now, granted, you know, this, the car back then was probably a 1930s model, so everything was very different, but I remember reading that and I was like, okay, well, these do exist, or at least used to, but I don't think there was one on his late 80s, early 90s Nissan Pulsar.
Now, I forgot about the Pulsar. When I saw this, you know, I asked you, it's like, is this a Pulsar? I completely forgot about it. But here's a question. Wasn't there a regular Pulsar, and this is the NX, wasn't there a regular Pulsar that was like maybe just a regular, like, sporty version of an economy car? I mean, this is kind of the same thing, but maybe like a regular hatchback.
Well, there was a Sportback model, so it was kind of a modular thing.
But you're talking about the generation after this.
No, this generation, this. So my understanding is they had this, the regular version, but then they had a Sportback where you could take that back section off and then you could put on like a kind of a wagon cab.
I think that one's the generation after this, if I remember correctly. But I only have my memory to go by. I mean, like, again, I haven't thought about this car in 20 years.
Yeah.
Because that's the one with, like, the crisscross taillights or something like that. They're, like, rectangles but with some inlay, so it looks like there's spaces.
Oh, I know what you mean.
And this one's not like that.
I think this is the same generation as a Sportback.
Okay, well, we'll check later and figure out, because I need to, I just have a need to know. It's, I need to start remembering my automotive past, you know? It's like, I got this book, Automotive World Book. I got 1970 and 74. 1970 is great, because in America, the cars were great. In 1974, the American cars were not that great. But you look at the European cars, there's a lot of cool stuff in 1974. Now, what was the purpose of me bringing that up? I can't remember right now. I'm on camera on the spot. But probably it's just that there are these cars from the past that I don't remember that I think would be good to relearn, see what I've forgotten. Because it's kind of boring just to be into the stuff that you're only interested in. You know, it's like, I don't want to forget the things I grew up with. Mm-hmm. Then I sound like every old man out there, you know, who thinks he knows what he's talking about and then doesn't.
Yeah. Don't remember things as clearly as you think you do.
Exactly. Or in the case of Ed Bundy, the older you get, the achievements get better. Did I say Ted Bundy or Ed Bundy?
No, you said Ed. No, you said Ed Bundy. I guess you were thinking of Al Bundy.
Al Bundy. Thank you. For some reason now, it just seemed wrong what I was saying.
Well, you misremembered.
Yes, exactly. You see, I need to brush up on this stuff. Anyway, I'm going to have to find some old Nissan brochures after this. So, my urban legends and lies, let me introduce you to this 1959 Cadillac. Do you see anything unusual about it?
Well, the trim is slightly off going from...
Yeah, I see that. I mean, that's not what I'm reaching for, but let me present you... excuse me. Let me present to you this idea. This may be the quintessential Cadillac from the 50s. Possibly. Arguably. Right? What if I told you they never came in pink?
Oh, man. Okay.
Okay, so let's look at this. Here's color chips from 1955. And there's 56. You can see one called Mountain Laurel that's kind of pinkish.
Yeah, but okay. Not that pink. Not right. Like Pepto pink.
Exactly. Okay. Here's 57. Now, that Mountain Laurel was also available in 57. They just don't have it listed here in words, not chips. You can see there's no pink in 57. And look in 58, they've got Meridian top poly. And I guess poly means metallic. So that's kind of like a rose, but it's not a pink. Down here we have Tahitian coral poly, which is coral, kind of pink. But in the end, they're not really pink colors. They're not like the pink that you think of Cadillac.
Yeah.
Here's the 1959 colored chip. You can see Woodrose Poly is kind of like a beige with some red in it, hence the Woodrose. But otherwise, there's no pink.
Yeah.
So this thing about the pink Cadillac is a little bit exaggerated. It's kind of an urban legend.
Were they Mary Kay cars?
No.
Just kidding.
Mary Kay didn't exist back then, that's for sure. I mean, the lady did. But her cars and her business did not.
Mm.
So, yeah, this thing about the pink Cadillac is it's an issue of nostalgia, which is idealized history. It's not about the reality of our history in Detroit, where Cadillac was building these cars. There are no pink Cadillacs from 1959 from the factory. Now, was there one special ordered? Possibly. But this car? No.
Is there any sort of history of like a certain dealer or a group of dealers that would pump out these pink ones, or is this
I don't know. I mean, there are other manufacturers that had pink, and I think pink is a very 1950s color, but I don't think so. I mean, I haven't dug any further beyond this, but I just thought it's an interesting fact.
Yeah. Yeah, see, yeah, I always just accepted it. I mean, you know, I used to have one of the giant model cars, you know, of course it was pink, you know. So I just figured, oh, yeah, that's how these came, or at least were available.
Yeah, not at all.
Interesting.
Not at all. But I bet, so to give credit, that pink car was from a Barrett Jackson auction.
Okay.
I don't want to steal pictures without giving credit. I wonder if that's the resale red for that car.
I would imagine so, yeah. Seems to be the go-to color for those, or, you know, the most well-known.
Yeah. So now we're back to an urgent, an automotive urban legend and lie for you.
Yes. All right,
this is the Viper Coupe. This is 1992 when it came out, or 94?
No, the GTS Coupes came out in 96.
96, okay.
So this is another high school story. I was talking with a guy in one of my classes, probably either junior or senior year of high school. And I don't know how we got onto the subject of cars, but he took it upon himself to just tell me a complete crock. I mean, it was entertaining and it was cool, but even back then you got to this certain point. It's like, wait a minute. So he's telling me, he's like, oh yeah. You know, I was like spending the night at my buddy's house, and we were up like one morning, and his dad had, I guess his buddy's dad was, you know, well off. Who knows if any of this is true? And he said, oh yeah, you know, so we got the keys to a couple of his dad's cars, and he got his dad's Corvette Z06, which at the time would have been a C5 Z06. He's like, and then I got in his Viper, and it was an automatic, you know, and so we were racing on the road. Yeah, I mean, even if he had those cars, I mean, I guess if you had enough money, you could get one of those converted to an automatic. But it really, the second he said that, you know, it just kind of spoiled it for me. I'm like, either you have no idea what you're talking about down to the fundamental differences between a stick and an automatic, or you're just lying for your own entertainment. I don't know what it was, but again, high school guy brain and cars. I don't know what happened. But aside from the fact that he was not telling the truth. But maybe it's one of those things. Maybe he thought it was true. You know, if you believe a lie, is it really a lie?
Maybe the starter was automatic.
It's something. I don't know. I have no idea. But, you know, for the time, it was entertaining.
These were my favorite Vipers.
Oh, yeah, they're gorgeous, man. I mean, obviously cruder than the ones that came after them. But, you know, I was reading an article several years ago, and I think they made a really good point. One of the things, I guess, you know, in the final generation, what worked against the Viper relative to the Corvette was, yes, it was an outright purist machine in the sense that it was stick only, but I think that worked against it in terms of sales because, you know, there are people that I'm sure even back in the 90s loved the looks, loved the power, maybe the sound, V10 engine, but for whatever reason, they either didn't want to drive stick or were physically not able to do it. And because of that, even though if they had the funds, they couldn't get one of these. You know, whereas a Corvette, at least, you know, in more recent years, the high performance models, like you could get a Z06 with an automatic. Wasn't the case back in the, you know, early 2000s, the Z06 was stick only, but, you know, in more recent years, yeah, you could have it either way.
You know, honestly, the V10, I don't think sounded very good.
See, that's the thing too. Yeah. Like I heard one of the, it was probably, 2015, 2016. And yeah, a lot of power, great looks, all that, but just it sounded like asthmatic, like it had a breathing problem. You know, it definitely didn't sound like a V8.
I mean, it should at least sound as cool as a V8.
Yeah, yeah, or sound, I mean, obviously it's going to sound different. It would be nice if it had like a menacing sound to it, but it just, at least the one I was around, it was a stock one. It just sounded a little underwhelming.
Thank you for the good story. And now my turn. Here we have a picture from Barrett Jackson.
Oh, yes.
The watermark, yeah. Our owner, our parent. So this is, you know this car, right? This is a 1969 Dodge Charger Daytona. The trunk's open, but otherwise looks good. The color code is F6, which I think is called bright green. I could be wrong. In any case, you know this was created to homologate all the modifications in the Charger for NASCAR. And they had to make at least 500, and they built just over 500 of these cars. What's kind of funny is that a lot of people I have seen online think that this is a 200 mile per hour car with a 426 Hemi.
Mm-hmm.
Let me show you what a 200 mile per hour car is. This one. This is a race car with a race Hemi, which, yeah, the stock car, that name comes from somewhere, but this car is not very stock. You know, when they talk about aerodynamics and all that, I think they tend to talk about the race car and not the street car. So number one, this car with a 426 Hemi, this car doesn't have the Hemi. A Hemi will have a little badge there. But a Hemi, a stock street Hemi Daytona, is not going to go 200 miles per hour. I will also tell you that the tire technology for street cars at the time, not 200. It's ridiculous why people think this is a 200 mile per hour car. The other thing, oh, and just so you know, this is the first time one of these cars went 200 miles per hour was at Talladega in, I'm not going to say this right. It wasn't in a race, it may have been a practice round, but they were, you know, they were keeping track of all the stuff. You know, there was all the clocks and all the, you know, all those doodads. You know, it's 200 miles per hour is official, even though it wasn't in a race. That's all I'm trying to say.
Yeah, so, it was capable of it.
Yes. So this car, the other thing that you see online that people talk about is that this car was banned by NASCAR. It's not true. After 1970, NASCAR tried to handicap these cars by reducing the engine size, among other things. I don't really remember what other compromises they were suggesting. I also believe, don't quote me, but I believe the Fords, which would be the Torino Talladega and the Cyclone Spoiler 2, those were also handicapped. Those were the other aero cars. They were not banned. Banned means, hey, you can't race this anymore.
Yeah.
NASCAR just handicapped it, and then it's up to the race team whether they want to have another car that's not handicapped or whatever, you know, whatever they determine for themselves to be most competitive.
Yeah.
So being banned and being handicapped are two different things. This, and that also includes the Superbird. I don't have a picture of the Superbird here. And just to give credit, I think I got this picture off Flickr or maybe Pinterest. I don't really remember. So it's kind of hard to give credit otherwise. But I made sure that I, you know, it's either Barrett Jackson or some place that's a little bit ambiguous. I mean, of course, this picture comes from somewhere. Some professional photographer took it. I wish I can give him credit, but at some point, it ends up being so many degrees of being shared online, and then we lose that. So it's a little bit unfortunate, but anyway, I'm babbling. So yeah, there's a lot of ridiculous stuff claimed about these cars. So now it is our Auto Hunter picks for the week. I have picked two, and you have picked two, and the first one is going to be me. Now, to tell you the truth, I'm not into Novas. I really don't care about them. That being said, if you want to get a car from this era, a Chevy, this is the best car to get because it's lightweight and it can still handle the big blocks. So even a small block like an LT1 Nova is awesome. I just never cared for Novas. But this one looks pretty cool. This is a 71. It's got a nice stance. It's got the Kragers, which I'm not into, but the car looks good.
You got a nice tuck going on there.
Yeah. So it's just a 350 car. I don't really know how much horsepower, but the car looks fast, and I'm going to presume it is fast and not just like, you know, some low performance 350 in it. I could do without the stripes in the hood. And the trunk lid especially, they never came with that. And I think sometimes applying stripes from one car to another car that never had that, you know, it's got different shapes. Why use the same stripe shape for a different car? It doesn't make sense to me. So I would remove those. But otherwise, I think this car is kind of cool. The auction ends on the 26th, which is a Monday. So February 26th, 2024 is when this auction ends.
Okay, yeah, so a little under a week.
Yeah, but it looks good. And next is a car that I find desirable, but you are going to talk about it, and that is this 2006 Z06 Corvette.
Yeah, so this is obviously a standout because it's a Z06, and being a C6 Z06, they went all out. They put a 7-liter LS7 V8 in there, 505 horsepower. So 100 horsepower jump going from the C5 version to this one. I mean, just absolute quantum leap. Six-speed manual, of course. This was back when, yeah, you couldn't get that with an automatic. Not yet, at least. I think the automatic Z06 option didn't pop up until the seventh generation. And what's even more remarkable about this is the fact that it is very low mileage, especially considering it's now 18 years old. So this only has 2,800 miles and change. So, very well kept. As you can imagine, it's been garage kept. And it was serviced 5 years ago, but that was within the last 500 miles. So oil change, fuel system service, new coolant, new power steering fluid, and brake fluid. Because I can tell you from experience, low mileage isn't the end all be all. Because my last car, you know, the Bullet, it was very low mileage, but it was also a 15-year-old car. So even though there wasn't a lot of mileage on certain parts, things age out. So it's very wise for the seller to get those things changed on this car, despite the low mileage. And this one, you reminded me, yeah, ends on Monday, February 26th. So a little closer than yours, but still time to get in bids.
I'll tell you something about these Corvettes. I think these are sized right. They actually look bigger than what they are when you see it in person. But the thing I never liked about them are the headlights.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I would prefer the previous generation's headlights.
Yeah, the pop-ups.
Yeah.
Yeah, these kind of remind me of the Ferrari 612 headlights a little bit, you know? Speaking of the lights, what's really attractive about these is actually the rear end, because the C5s were attractive, but to me, they had their butt was a little too big. A little too chunky, a little
Rubenesque. This one's very nice and compact. It's like no overhang.
Yeah, yeah. Very short overhang. And then they cut it off at the end. And then they get the big round taillights, which makes me think of the first series C4 vets. So, yeah, just a nice, there's a restraint to the back end, you know, an efficiency. And then to me, kind of a modern throwback with those big round taillights. Very attractive.
So my second Auto Hunter Spotlight car is this 1964 Pontiac GTO. Of course, 64 was the first year for the GTO package for the Le Mans. This one's a sport coupe, or is it sports coupe? Here we go again.
Yeah.
I think Chevrolet had a sport coupe and Pontiac has sports coupe. I don't know. Don't quote me, folks. This one's kind of cool, because it's a two-tone car. You can see there's a gold on top and a beige on the bottom, and the interior's tan. I would say that it's the automatic doesn't interest me. It's a two-speed automatic and a four-barrel, which is probably the most common configuration for this car. But it's a very nice-looking GTO. It's in a color combination that you don't often find. It's very adult-looking in many ways.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a perfect way of summarizing it, because the colors are very restrained. It's not eye popping. It's not a look at me here color combination.
It's something that you would expect more in a four door Catalina, maybe, but it's nice. Like someone discerned through all the, maybe I'm saying it wrong. Let me try to rephrase it. Someone understood colors and how to spec it out. This isn't just something that a dealer thought, okay, let's just get a few of these. You know, so someone took care in speccing this car out.
Yeah. And, you know, to me, especially, you know, knowing what we know about the GTO now, going with a restrained color combination like this, even down to the interior, it's like a metallic tan almost. To me, that makes this even more eye-catching than a louder color. You know, it's that juxtaposition, because, yeah, it's a high-performance car, it's a special car, but it's got a subdued color palette. It just ends up getting more attention than it otherwise would, I think.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah, it's a very handsome car.
And, you know, the 64 sometimes, even though it's the first, sometimes they don't receive the love, because the facelifted 65 is so great. in many people's eyes that this looks a little bit more dowdy, especially from the front. But to me, it looks like a Pontiac. There's nothing wrong with it.
That's a good old car.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And then the splitters, right?
Yeah.
That's what you call them? Yeah, yeah.
So this car presents well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, the condition, the colors. That's a great pick.
And we got one more from you?
Yes, yeah. So
Wait a sec. This GT, forgive me. This ends on the 28th of February, which is a Wednesday.
Okay, yeah. So exactly a week from now.
Yes.
As of recording, this will drop on the 22nd,
correct.
But yeah, so my second pick, believe it or not, this does 200 miles an hour. Just kidding. This is a 77 GMC C2500. So as you can tell by the C, this is a two-wheel drive Sierra Classic. Now, there's a lot going on here. So, I mean, to me, the first appealing thing about this, like the GTO, is the color combo. So according to the seller, this has the original paint, and that color combination is neutral and russet. A little different. I think it's very attractive. You know, it has this kind of rustic quality to it. And then the fact that it's, you know, the original paint is really neat. You know, it's definitely held up well. And then 77, from what I've read, was a one-year-only trim color. So it's got that kind of goldish-yellow trim running mm-hmm. down the sides. And then, like the paint, the engine, the 454, another standout
feature. Oh, so this is a 454. Okay.
Yeah. That, like the paint, is reported to be original as well, paired with the 3-speed automatic. And this one also has, being a, you know, 3/4-ton truck, it makes sense. This was originally equipped with the camper special package. So you get a wiring harness for the camper body. You get heavy-duty front suspension parts like the springs, a stabilizer bar. According to the odometer, this doesn't even have 100,000 miles on it. And, you know, on top of all that, this has got a lot of new parts. So last year, had the valve cover gaskets, the oil pan gasket, the differential cover gasket replaced. There's also some new suspension components in addition to the front end. So new shocks, sway bar bushings, and even cab bushings. So on top of all that, nice color combo, original engine, all that kind of stuff. It also has documentation. So it comes with a build sheet, service records, and the power steering box has been replaced, but the original is included. It just needs to be rebuilt.
Yeah, this is a nice pick.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the second I saw this, I was like, okay, color combos got me. I love the wheels. And then, you know, knowing that it's a 454, even better. Unfortunately, I will not be able to bid on this, but other people can bid on this, and they have until Tuesday, February 27th.
Very cool. So that wraps up this week's edition of Drive the Bid podcast. Thank you very much, Derek, for your assistance with our presentation. And folks, thanks for watching. Be sure to press subscribe on YouTube so you can see others and also be given notice when the next Drive the Bid podcast appears. Thank you.
Thank you.